verses 13 through 16 say, "You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under a bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven." Well, I'm going to do something this morning that I'm pretty sure I've never done before. And that's preach to you a sermon that I've already preached to you before. But it's been 19 years, so some of you haven't heard this. This is one of the very first sermons that I gave as I started as pastor of First Baptist Church, and it's timely. Now, having said that, let me say this also: if there was ever a Sunday when I was perhaps maybe should have preached a different sermon to one service and then another sermon to the 11:15 service, this might be it, because I'm going to give y'all some props, all right? A lot of the stuff that I'm getting ready to talk about, y'all just need reminders on, but you don't need correction on, okay? That's not going to be quite the case at the contemporary service. There are some things I need to address with them, and they're actually, we're going to be making some changes in that service in a few weeks, because there's just some things that need to be done differently and better to help that service reach young people in many ways, but reach more people. So anyway, if you were here 19 years ago and you remember this sermon, then you're doing real good, all right? And maybe you do, and maybe you didn't like it then, and I'm sorry, you're going to listen to it again. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. But this is kind of a nuts and bolts message. We're not going to get real deep in this message. Not all truths are deep. Some truths are there right on the surface, and we just need to be reminded of. So what I want to talk to you about today are the 10 most important people in church on Sunday. All right? So let's just jump into this. 10 most important people on Sunday. And number one on the list, you can write these down if you want to. I don't have sermon notes or anything. But the most important person in church on Sunday is a visitor. Okay? It's a visitor. And the reason for that is because when they come here, they're searching for something. They may be new to the area and looking for a community of faith where they can be loved and accepted, where they can learn and grow, where their children can learn about God in a nurturing environment. They may be people who are burned in a previous church, because let's face it, churches are messy places, right? Churches are places where sinners gather. We're all sinners, and sometimes churches let their dysfunctions kind of take over their lives, just like it happens in people's lives. And so sometimes churches can become toxic. They can become very dysfunctional, and people get hurt. People get burned. And sometimes when that happens to people, they just drop out altogether. They don't drop out on God. They don't drop out on Jesus, but they drop out on church. They give up on church. But the really hardy souls don't do that. The really hardy souls decide to give church another try. Maybe one last try before dropping out altogether. And so they may be here, right in our midst, trying to give church one last try, hoping to find a safe place. And some of the visitors that come to our church are hurting. They're hurting people. They're hurting because of circumstances in their lives. They're dealing with loneliness, or maybe the betrayal of a friend. Maybe they're going through a divorce, or an unexpected job loss, or some tragic death in their lives. And so they're looking for a place to find some comfort. They're looking for a safe place for comfort. Or maybe they're here because in a world that seemingly has gone crazy, they're looking for some answers. They have some real questions about this world, and they're scared and they're alarmed. And church is one place that they have come to see if there is someone or something out there that can make sense of what's going on in the world. But regardless of how a visitor gets here, they're here. They've been motivated by a friend. You know, if somebody's invited them to come, or they're motivated by a deep need, they bring their hurts and their questions and their apprehensions. And before they look for these deep needs, they need to know that this is a safe place, a place where they can be accepted just as they are. So they look for warmth, and they look for acceptance, and they look for smiles. And when they receive these things, then they'll come back and they'll look for those deep things that they need met. And when they don't receive these things, they usually go away and never come back again. I mean, why would they? Right? So everybody else that's on this list that I'm going to give you, 2 through 10, everybody else that's on this list is because of number 1, all right? It's because of the visitor and what they may be going through and what we want them to go through, all right? So let's move on down to number 2. The second most important person in the church is a greeter. A greeter. It's pretty well established if you've been around here for a while that I'm a dog person, right? Y'all know that about me. It's not true that I hate cats. That is absolutely not true. I don't. In our time that Pam and I have been married and stuff, we've had 2 cats. The first cat was Ginger, and she was a real sweet cat. She was a lap cat. If a lap formed, she was in it. Sometimes I'd be reading the paper, and all of a sudden the paper would be destroyed because she had jumped up. And then she started doing the circle thing in my lap, and she had claws, so, you know. And then she would settle down. One time, we got her when we were in Georgia, and I had a vegetable garden out back. And one time I'd squatted down to do something in the dirt, and I looked down, and there was Ginger in my lap. That's just how she was. So Ginger was a great cat, and I cried when Ginger died. And then a few months later, after she died, the Pam and the kids found me, and they said that they had found a black kitten that looked like Ginger, and he was free, and could we have him? And so I said yes, and the kids named him Spencer for some reason. I don't know. He was the spawn of Satan, right? Man, Pam and Austin liked him, but Angela and I had a different view of Spencer. We could be petting him, and for no reason at all, he would reach up and bite us. I don't know what it was. Spencer had the aloof cat thing down to a T, all right? The only reason he ever acknowledged my existence was because I was the one that fed him. Other than that, I didn't need to exist in his life whatsoever, you know. So I was sad when Spencer died, but I didn't cry. But let me tell you a big reason why I'm a dog person. Because there is no greeting like a dog greeting. All right? You know what I'm talking about? When I come home, it doesn't matter how long I've been out of the house. When I come home, I get a greeting from my dog like no other greeting you ever get. When I come home, we live in a split foyer, so you open up the front door and you either got to go down the steps or up the steps. And Kobe, my beagle, our beagle, but you know, he's always standing at the front of at the top of the stairs, and he is doing the full body wag. You know what a full body wag is? You ever heard the expression, the tail wagging the dog? That's it. All right. His whole body is wagging. And that's the greeting I get with Kobe every time I come home. It is literally the best part of his day. And that has been true of every dog that I have ever had. When I was a kid, the first dog we had was a Cocker Spaniel Beagle mix. And I asked Mom to put him outside in the backyard every day at 3 o'clock. So that when I walked home, that was in the days when kids walked home from school. When I walked home, he'd be at the gate in the backyard to greet me. And then after him, we had a miniature dachshund named Scooter. And when I came home from school, he'd come running from wherever he was. And he'd jump all over me, and I'd just lay on the ground, and he'd get on my chest, stand all 4 feet on my chest, and just lick me to death. I couldn't push him off, you know. And you know what? It was always the best minute of my day. No matter what kind of day I could have the worst day of my life. And when I came home and that dog greeted me, it just turned everything around. There is no greeting like a dog greeting. You know, the first 5 minutes of a person's experience in any place that they enter is really determines what's going to happen in the next hour. Most people who come to our church for the first time have decided within the first 5 minutes whether they're ever going to come back again, based upon what kind of experience they have in that first 5 minutes, how warm and friendly and exciting the people are. So we need greeters who know how to give a dog greeting, all right? Now, you don't need to do the full body wag, all right? That would be over the top, be a little weird. And we certainly don't want you licking anybody in the face. That would be totally over the top. But we do need you to give them a dog greeting. So the people who serve as our greeters are our first line people. They are often the first person that a visitor ever meets from our church. So they're their first encounter. So if you're a friendly person, if you really care about people, if you really care about their spiritual conditions, we really need you to consider to being one of those frontline people. We really do. Because like I said, the first 5 minutes, not just for the visitors, but for everybody, the first 5 minutes helps determine what happens in the next hour. So as the visitor walks in, the next important person would be the welcome desk volunteer. Now, here's the difference between what happens with the welcome desk and what happens with the greeter. A greeter's interaction with the visitor is necessarily brief, right? You can't have a long conversation with him. It's kind of, hi, how you doing, you know? And when you say, how you doing, you're just being nice, right? If they stop and tell you, it's kind of weird. We don't do that with each other, right? So, you know, you stand at the door, hi, welcome to First Baptist Church, that kind of thing. It's not really the place for long conversations because there's other people coming in that the greeter needs to greet. So the welcome desk volunteer is often, if not most of the time, the first conversation that a visitor to our church has with anybody with our church. Every new place is orienting. And the welcome desk is where people come to get oriented, you know. Because even with signs telling people where to go, we often don't see the signs. So the welcome desk people are the ones who help them get oriented, right? We need to know where the restrooms are and where the water fountains are. And if you've got children, you need to know where to take your children and your youth and things like that. So they're the ones who help them get oriented and help them fill out a registration card if they want to do that and point them out to the free coffee that we offer every morning. That first conversation is vitally important. The fourth important person is our child care worker. You know, a parent can't fully experience a worship service if they're worried about what's going on with their children. And if they know that their children are being taken care of, that they're being loved and nurtured and that they're safe, then they're going to be able to enter into worship, into everything that happens during this hour. They're probably going to enjoy the break, right? And so our child care workers are vitally, vitally important. And by the way, if you don't know, we need to be in prayer for Rachel Piles. She went to the hospital yesterday, and she is scheduled to have a back fusion. She's been dealing with back trouble for the last year. And so this is amazing. It's outpatient, and she'll be home the same day, and she'll be out of commission for about 3 weeks. But let's keep in prayer for Rachel. But Rachel really does a great job of welcoming our parents and showing them around and helping them to feel that their kids are going to be safe. And we have some paid workers and some volunteers, and they really do a great job. So we appreciate all of them. So now that's all that's happened, okay, to a visitor, and they've not yet entered into the worship space, okay? So here's what happens when they come in. So the next important person is going to be the usher. Person standing at the back door with the bulletins, greeting them and stuff. They're their first contact in the worship center. They're the guide to this space. And they also set the tone for the service, how friendly they are, you know. I know ushers are your friends, but while they're ushing, that's probably not the time to be talking to them and stuff, right? Let them talk to them afterwards, and let them be about the business of ushering, you know, and greeting people as they walk into our worship service and taking care of their needs. All right. Number six. See, this is a fast sermon. There's no such thing as a bad short sermon, is there? Number six. Are the people who are in the worship center when the visitor enters. Okay? When a person walks into here, the people who are there are vitally important because they're taking their cues from you. So if you're just sitting there and you're not really engaged, or you're only talking with your friends and you're not really paying attention to what's going on, and they have to kind of find their own seat and get oriented all by themselves and nobody's engaging them, that's sending all kind of bad signals. So the people who are already here, and then the people who come in after that, all of you are vitally important. So smile, you know. You're in church, smile. Introduce yourself to people. If you see somebody you don't know, don't sit down. Go introduce yourself to them and offer them assistance. You know, if they come in late and we're already singing, then offer them a hymn book, and y'all are real good about doing that. But talk to them. Talk to them. Get to know them before the service. Talk to them after the service. Find out about them. And be sensitive to their spiritual needs. During the service, pay attention to what's going on to the people around you. Back in the summer of 2006, this is another dog story, but it's not. It's a people story with a dog. Back in 2006, when I was on sabbatical, spent the first 2 weeks of sabbatical at a guitar building workshop up in Vermont. But what had happened before that is that our dog, Bear, our black lab for many, many years, who gave me the original full body wag, we had to put him down. He had gotten cancer in the stomach, and we tried to nurture him along, but it became evident to me that he was going to die while I was gone, and I couldn't do that. So we made the decision that the day before I left that we would take him to the vet, and so that's what we did. So then I, you know, came home. It's very emotional, but then I had to get ready, and boom, I'm gone. And I'm gone for 2 weeks. And so while I'm gone for 2 weeks, I'm not dealing with anything but, you know, what I'm doing. I'm not even thinking about that. I'm not grieving or anything. And then 2 weeks later on a Saturday, it was time to get in the car and go home. And I'm driving home from Vermont, and I realize when I get there, I'm not getting the full body wag. And it's hard to drive on the interstate with your eyes full of tears, right? So I had to drive that thought out of my mind. Came home and get settled in and everything. And then one of our neighborhood girls lived across the street. She came over and she had drawn a picture. And it was a picture of our house, and there was a black dog in the picture. And it said, "Bear will always live in our hearts." And I was a blubbering mess at that point. All right, so next morning, I'm on sabbatical, so I'm not coming here. Pam and the kids come to First Baptist Church. And I decide to go to Trinity United Methodist Church right down on Patrick Street. A buddy of mine I know there, really good preacher, wanted to hear him preach, wanted to just be a worshiper, you know. So I went to the service, and wouldn't you know it, he was on vacation. But small church, small congregation, and so we're worshiping and we're singing hymns, and it's very raw for me emotionally, you know. So I'm singing hymns. They might have even been happy hymns. I can't remember, but I'm tearing up, you know. It's very evident that I'm kind of raw during this. And there's a couple sitting on the same pew with me, just a few feet away, and she's paying attention. And during part of the worship service, like I said, small congregation, so they would take time to allow people to stand up and give prayer requests, and then they'd have a prayer. And after a little bit, hearing people talk about, you know, their aunt's, you know, operation or something like that, this woman on the same row from me stood up and she said, you know, I think we need to pray for people who are here maybe for the first time, who are maybe struggling with something in their lives, something spiritually in their lives. And I looked at her and I thought, oh, she's talking about me, you know. She doesn't, you know, she thinks maybe my dad died or something. It's my dog, you know. But she was sensitive to what was going on with me and praying for me and inviting the congregation to pray for me. So be sensitive to what's going on with the people, particularly the first-time guests who are here, and pick up any cues about things that they might be going through that you can lift them up in prayer about. All right. So the people who are here, particularly the people who sit next to our guests, are vitally, vitally important to what happens and to their experience. Okay, we're going to go through these next couple kind of quick, but number 8 on our list is the custodian. Have you thought about that? One of the impressions on a person for the very first time is the cleanliness of the building. Now, we fell a little bit short on that because of Feed My Starving Children. Chip's already alluded that, you know, we've got the rice, but, you know, we're able to turn a lemon into lemonade and talk about, you know, our vision and everything. But that doesn't happen very often. And one of the very best things that we ever did was, what, a year or so ago? When we moved in here, we got a cleaning service rather than a custodian. And the thing about a cleaning service is that although they were professional, they weren't attached to our church. They had no vested interest. To them, it was just a job and probably a low-paying job in the first place. So they did an okay job, you know. But there's a lot of times on Sunday mornings where we would all walk around and we'd kind of say, you know. And so the best thing that we ever did was the decision to get rid of the cleaning service and hire one of our own as custodian. We hired Jim Schrock. And most of y'all know Jim Schrock. And Jim is doing just a really great job. He's part-time. But he does a great job because he cares. This is his church, you know, and so he wants it to look presentable when we gather for Sunday morning. So when you see Jim sometime today, he'll probably be around. Instead of saying, "Hey, there's rice on the floor, can you sweep it up," or something like that, just say thank you, you know. Thank Jim for the great job that he does, because it's making a first impression on the people who are here for the very first time. Okay, so I've talked about 8 people, and I've not yet talked about anybody here on the platform. Have you noticed that? So, and in fact, as I walked in today, I realized, you know what? I've left somebody off the list, and they're not on the platform. Our sound and lights people and the people who work our slideshow, they're vitally important to the experience that we have here also. So I'm actually sticking them number 9. So number 10 would be the musicians and the worship leaders. And guess what? I was 10, but those guys back there just bumped me off the list. I don't even make the top 10. And see, here's the thing. It's about 25 minutes in before I get up to preach my sermon. And by that time, most people have already decided whether or not they're coming back to this church. And there's hardly a thing that I can do or say that's going to change their mind. Because when a person's here for the first time, they really don't care how good or bad the sermon is. What they care about is, were they warmly received? Were they accepted just as they were? Is this a friendly church? Now, those of us who have friends in church, we think it's a friendly church, right? Because we have friends and everybody's talking to us and stuff. But it's our visitors who get to determine whether or not we really are a friendly church and are warm and accepting of them. Now, all of this may seem, like I said, just rudimentary and in some ways maybe even unnecessary for a Sunday morning sermon. But it really is vitally important. If we're going to be light unleashed to our community, then that means not only what we do when we go out and we minister at Waverly and Feed My Starving Children and Convoy of Hope and things like that, but we've got to be light when people come in here. When people come in here looking for God, looking for answers, looking for a friend, looking for love and acceptance, when we're friendly, when we treat them the way we want to be treated when we go someplace, we are being light unleashed in their life. It's as simple as a smile, a handshake, and a 5-minute conversation. It doesn't take very long. I'm going to close with something that I found. Let me just read it to you, and I think the point will be made. It's called, I'm a Nice Stranger. I never complain. I never create a scene. When I go to church, I never offer an objection if the usher leads me down the long aisle to the front seat while all the members of the church crowd the back seats and fix their curious gaze on my embarrassed march. No, I just take my seat. I'm a nice visitor. I never growl aloud when I have to push by or walk over the feet of church members who hog the aisle seats and would not move out of their favorite places if it meant the salvation of a soul. No, I just sit down meekly. I'm the ideal church stranger. I never reprimand young people who sit behind me, chewing gum and whispering and giggling. Oh no, I'm too polite for that. At the close of the services, as I walk toward the door, I never make a scene if nobody speaks to me or shakes my hand. No, they gather in little cliques and don't bother me. I'm the nice visitor to church. And I'll tell you what else I am. I'm the stranger who never comes back. That's my little revenge for not being welcomed. I know when I'm not wanted. I can sense when church members are cliquish and unfriendly. I can tell when they lack interest in the spiritual welfare of the visitors. I, of course, am too cultured or too nice to say anything. I just go to some other more friendly, more hospitable, more spiritual church, or I don't go to church at all. I wouldn't make a complaint. I'm a nice visitor. I just don't go back. And there are millions of us who could be reached by a little hospitality and warmth. Are you just a nice, complacent church member? Or are you genuinely concerned about the spiritual condition of a stranger and a visitor? Let's pray. Father, one of the things that you told ancient Israel was hospitality. You told them that they were not to reject the alien in their midst, the person, the foreigner who came from outside and does have has no family connection or friendship connection. They are obviously cut off and looking for a safe place. And you instructed Israel to be that safe place to them, to not fear the stranger, but to welcome them into their midst. It's a little bit different in church, but not a whole lot. Help us to take that command that you gave to the Israelites to be hospitable to any person and extend it to everybody who comes into our church, who takes a chance, who takes a risk, who ventures to come into a place where perhaps they don't know a single person and they're looking for someone. And help us to remember, Lord, that by our actions, we help determine and lead them to a loving relationship with you, our Heavenly Father, who's never rejected any of us, but always receives us with open arms, full of grace, full of mercy, full of forgiveness, full of love. May our interactions, O Lord, always reflect your hospitable and loving nature. For it's in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen.